This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
We don't want our children being influenced by queers, surely, Matt?
Surely not. What a terrible thing.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine here on Joy 94.9. Marg and Carol with you today. And the second hour of Saturday Magazine, well, we've got our usual community roundup and everything, of course. But we've also...
Speaking of being influenced by queers.
Yes. Speaking of that,
we'll be talking to some gay men who have chosen to become fathers, and we'll be chatting with Rodney from Gay Dads, who has a child through surrogacy, and he and his partner have full-time custody of their child, and Michael and Francisco, who are co-parents with two lesbians and share custody of their child.
So a few different ways of men having children, not that it's particularly easy for guys to... have children. It can be quite a complex thing, but we'll be looking into that after the usual. I'm having to share a microphone with Mark Gardner. It's very cozy in here, but thank you to you too. You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Carol and Marg, but you're also going to be listening with a few dads this afternoon. Now, it's interesting because I can remember back, probably back in the mid-70s, speaking with a gay male friend who was lamenting that one of the, I guess, sad things regarding his sexuality that he was talking about was that he felt that it meant that he'd miss out on having children. And really, at that time, I think that was a fair comment to make. It's not really the case anymore, but I still think it's not that easy for gay men to have children. It can be very expensive and or complicated. And today we're going to talk to three men who've made the decision to become fathers. We've got Rodney. Hi, Rodney.
Hello.
And we've got Michael.
Hey, yeah.
And Francesca. Francisco. Oh, God.
We got there in the end.
Sorry. Can I call you Cisco?
Yeah, please.
Oh, good. Thanks, Cisco. And look, maybe can we start perhaps at the beginning? I'm just interested to know, did all of you always expect that you would be dads one day?
Well,
Rodney?
When I was young, late at high school, I thought about wanting to become a dad very early on, and even though I realised I was gay, it sort of didn't gel with me that it's something like that couldn't happen. And then as I got to my early 20s, I started realising that it was unlikely to happen. I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I was probably more interested then in just exploring being gay, having fun like that. And it wasn't till maybe 10, 12 years ago, and I started thinking about it more seriously. Then I met my partner, Jeff, and found somebody who wanted to be a father as well. And I think that's quite important. You need to have two people in the relationship that wants to share that journey. And then we just took the steps from there.
What about you guys, Cisco, Michael? Did you always feel that it was
going to be
something you could do?
No. When I was married, it became an option.
So...
And yeah, that got shot down in flames.
Oh, so you were probably married to a woman like me who never wanted kids.
but afterwards, as I think it's age really that triggered it for me. I was in a very stable relationship with Michael, and suddenly it was like, kids could be a really wonderful part to kind of make the family even bigger.
And what about Michael? Is having kids something you thought you'd always do?
It's interesting. I think just that heteronormative stuff you're raised when you come into the world, you have kind of the lies that you're going to have kids and the parents expect grandkids, and you come out and then it's like, oh my God, I'm a fag, so that means I'm infertile, really socially infertile. And so you go through a period, I actually went through a period of not expecting to have kids because I was that notion of not being quite a whole man, really. And then I suppose reached my 30s and began thinking about it as a possibility, but it takes a long time to transform from one point to another until it becomes a reality again.
So the decision in all your cases to actually become parents was very much a joint decision with partners?
Oh, definitely. I even though I wanted to be a father, I don't think I would have opted to do it alone. Maybe I would have if I was in that situation, but I think it's something I wanted to share with somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, how long a decision was it, though, for some of you? I mean, is it something you had to stew over for a long time? I mean, pregnancies of this nature don't happen by accident, do they?
No, they're by plan and design.
We tried a lot of bottles of red wine between us, but it didn't quite happen.
How long did... Well, for, so, I mean, Rodney, for us, you went through the surrogacy side of things. So how long did it take you to kind of really make the decision, okay... This is a big decision. Are we ready for this? And yes, we're going to do it. I mean, from start to finish. Actually,
we made the decision at about, you know, it took about a couple of weeks really to decide to do surrogacy. Then it took a lot longer to decide how to do it and how we were going to afford it.
Ah, right. Okay. Because I guess
so the decision was quite easy.
Yeah, and we perhaps go into that a bit later, that it isn't an easy way of doing things. It's a very expensive way. And what about Cisco, Michael? Your decision was to actually kind of co-parent with, I understand, two lesbians?
Yeah.
Was that a long, drawn-out sort of decision-making process?
Yep, we talked about it for a year and a half, nutting stuff out. And then we tried getting pregnant for 7 months, and then it was on, really.
And finding the right people to co-parent with. It's clearly a very important part of the process.
Yeah, that was part of the... You're absolutely right. That was part of the kind of journey. We'd had two very dear friends in Sydney, because we were living there then, who were our kind of preferred couple, really. And so we chose each other to start this adventure with. And a year into the process, it just strained the friendship so much that we had to abandon it. So it was, and it was a kind of a year leading up to that, and then a year of discussing it and then repairing the friendship afterwards, which left, and that was a good 2 to 3 years. And then we had to look at, do we adopt? I don't want to have to disown being a gay man to go through an adoption process. I don't want to have to pass as straight and a straight single man and deny my relationship to enter into that contract. So then we were left in do we look at surrogacy? We couldn't afford surrogacy. So it was where do we go from here? And we'd thought of two women who lived in Melbourne who we had known for a decade and a half, and they had independently thought of us as well as people they'd like to co-parent with. So all up, it was probably a 5-year way-to-go process of trying to find someone.
So you actually did think about the surrogacy option. Did Jeff and you, Rodney, ever think about the option that Michael took as well?
Yeah, we certainly talked about co-parenting as one of our first options. Adoption was first, but that wasn't available, of course. Co-parenting was the next option. And for us, the decision was we wanted to be full-time dads. We didn't want to have to share it. And we thought if we went into co-parenting, it would be problematic because it's not ultimately what we really wanted. And thanks to a video that was shown on SBS, we discovered surrogacy at that time. And that, you know, convinced us.
And I guess that's the biggest challenge, isn't it, as gay men, that as lesbians you still have the option of getting a donor who doesn't necessarily want to be involved and have co-custody, but you don't really have that option. So you've either got to go down the surrogacy track or the co-parenting track, which does... co-parenting obviously has its challenges because you're dealing with all of those people's emotions and needs and, you know, how do you... The practicalities of sharing custody of the child and all of that kind of thing. So it's a very complicated thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I find the biggest complication is... it takes years to negotiate a good, strong relationship just with your partner, but suddenly... You know, the other two people who are entering into it aren't your partners, but the relationships are so intimate and become even more enmeshed with each. And then there's a child in the middle of it, and the work is incredible. It's kind of good on one level because you suddenly have to pull generosity out of your ass, really, because it's more than you've ever been before. And it's kind of good because you just think, I'm going to have to be like this with my child anyway. And you have to learn to to just share and sit still with everything going around you and hold it in place.
Yeah, and have to be prepared to be very grown up about the conversations you have. I mean, I know just even going through the process with a donor father who has some contact but not shared custody with my children, that the conversations you have even at that level are stuff that normally friends and other people don't go near.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have to really grow up about the kind of conversations you have, don't you?
The trust is incredible. You have to just hand yourself over and make yourself vulnerable and believe that it will be okay.
And I think a dance floor relationship under the mirror ball at 2 in the morning with good friends is very different from changing nappies and emotionally negotiating all one's insecurities that are thrown up. And it's really the emotions are fat and big when a baby arrives in the world.
Very true. Listening to Saturday Magazine's Joy 94.9, and we're speaking with Rodney, Michael and Cisco. It's Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, working my way back to you, and there's been a lot of work going on in this studio, I can tell you. We're talking today on Saturday Magazine with Rodney, Michael and Cisco, who are gay dads, and we've been talking about the sort of decisions about becoming a dad and how difficult or how easy the decisions were. I'm just wanting to work out sort of what were some of the difficulties that you did experience in sort of actually getting the, you know, the actual process? Rodney, as a, you know, using surrogacy, I know that this is expensive. Was that the hardest part, getting, you know, being able to afford it?
Yeah, I think so. I think the hardest part was working out where the money was going to come from. And it's probably no coincidence that a lot of men who do surrogacy who are older, they're in their late 30s, early 40s, because it probably takes you that long in your life to actually, you know, get some savings behind you. So it was difficult, but it was something we were quite determined to do. We were both working, we both saved quite hard, and that was the first step. The next step, of course, is actually trying to work out actually how to go about through the process of surrogacy, because it involves dozens and dozens of different people, and it's all done in a different country.
I guess the other thing is you've got to decide who you want as the egg donor.
Yes, that's always a challenge.
I guess, though, that's sort of similar that you... I mean, in a sense, Cisco and Michael, you would have had that same issue of who's going to be the biological mother of our children and how do we get on with these people or this person.
Yeah, it was really important for us to know the women and have a prior standing friendship that was built on respect and trust and all of those things that make friendships endure. Mm. So it was a part of our kind of unconscious and conscious selection process, and it would have been the same for the girls as well, I think.
Rodney, I mean, you wouldn't have that closeness or that amount, that I suppose intimacy in a sense with your egg donor, because as you say, it would have been much more of a business type arrangement, I would imagine.
In fact, we know quite a lot about our egg donors. We had two egg donors that we used. We know quite a lot about them, but we never met them, and they were anonymous egg donors in our case. Other surrogate dads have used eggs from one of their sisters, for example, so who've been quite generous, and there are others who have known egg donors, so somebody who they know who is going to donate an egg. I think the bigger relationship that gets formed is actually with the surrogate, who has no biological connection to the child, who is actually going to carry your child for you for 9 months. Mm. That's where the big relationships come in.
What about the sort of legal aspects? Well, for both of these situations, there must be a lot of legal issues that you have to spend time sorting out and thinking about. How hard is that side of things?
Well, for Michael,
Cisco,
and I, we sat down with the girls and we took ourselves to the worst possible place we could go to and decided that that's not where we wanted to go. And we could have signed off forms and things, but we all chose trust, really, and faith that this has to work. For the sake of our children, it has to work. And so we haven't any forms filled out. We had a book that we started off that sort of stated all of our fears and what we had, the kind of parents we wanted to be and the kind of life we wanted for our child. But that's it really. Mm. So we've thought about it a lot, but we actually haven't done lots and lots of paperwork.
Is it something that you would envisage doing at some point, or you're happy to keep things the way it is?
At some point, there's going to be a parenting agreement drawn up, but really they mean, they're just kind of, you know, this is how we wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. They really have no standing, but the parenting agreement is kind of the way that we'll go, simply because we want to maintain a certain level of trust and faith. Yeah. Between all five of us.
But also it's a document that will help us have basic principles that inform why we make decisions. Mm. And how we grade and integrate the co-parenting of our child. And I think having something put onto paper that we've all had to think about quite consciously, and that's the different journey, I think, for queer parents, is that maybe, that's a generalisation, but in relation to opposite sex parents, we very consciously think about our parenting journey, and a document that we'll, the four of us, put in place, I think it becomes an organic way of growing our relationship.
And you do have to have that trust, but obviously things do sometimes go wrong. Mm. and I guess the family court and places like that are recognising that more and more, that it's about the children and the children's needs and protecting the children's needs.
Mm.
Which is, I guess, why going down that parenting document track ultimately is probably a good thing for all of you. The legal aspects of the surrogacy arrangement, Rodney, you are just the parents. There is no... How does that work legally in terms of custody and who is the official legal parent and that kind of thing?
Well, it depends on which country you're in. If we're in the US, we would be considered both Ethan's legal parents. Back in Australia, it's a little bit different. One of us, the non-biological father, is not considered Ethan's legal parent. However, for all practical effects, these days, particularly since the changes in federal legislation this year, we are considered as Ethan's parents. And practically, in a day-to-day basis, in, you know, childcare and hospitals and all that sort of stuff, we haven't ever encountered any issues at all. They just see us as both as the fathers.
And I guess, you know, that's not always the case, that people do have struggles in terms of acceptance and the way they're treated by society and different people they have to deal with.
That's very true. I'm sure that there are lots of situations, and particularly historically, where that comes into play. We've been really fortunate that we haven't encountered that, and we know very few people who have encountered those sort of things. And I think it just reflects that society is far more advanced than shock jocks and the politicians are. They're far more further ahead in realising that these things are reality.
Yeah. We've had a text from John who says he thinks it's very unfair on the child that donor dads are not given some access to the child. And that's obviously a different situation to what you're in. You're actively parenting your children. John, I guess it's about the agreement that you come up with in the beginning. It's what you're talking about, Cisco and Michael particularly, is that you have to be very clear what the arrangements are and have all of those very difficult conversations. My knowledge, John, tells me, I think, that in Victoria, anyway, the Register of Births, Deaths and Marriages, there are provisions made for the children to know who their biological parents are, so that those records are held, so that once the children turn 18, they can actually access those records.
Yes, the father's name won't appear on the birth certificate as such, but is listed on the register, which is quite different, but they're all connected, so it's there as a matter of public record.
I must admit, what you've just said, it's not for everybody. I think I agree. I mean, I agree. I've said on this very radio station in the past that there should be a pill that you have to take to become pregnant rather than the other way around, because, you know, I really feel that it's just so easy for some heterosexual couples to, have sex and, well, you're pregnant. Oh, well, never mind. That it's a very laissez-faire sort of come day, go day.
Six Bacardi breezes later.
Yeah. Yeah, you're precisely. There. And, you know, I mean, I think that when you consider the amount of effort that you guys go to and the amount of thought that's put into it, it's such a different experience. And yet there is still so many people who are so biased against gays and lesbians becoming parents.
Well, we certainly can't have accidental pregnancies. It certainly doesn't happen.
No. I'm going to give you a minute to think about your answer to this one. I guess, you know, a couple of sentences about parenting and the best thing and what it means and that kind of thing. Because as you said, Michael, it's a very emotional thing and it brings out stuff you actually didn't know existed in you as a parent. So, you know, a little sum up thingo about being a dad, being a parent. In the meantime, Rodney, there's a forum coming up on June the 6th. Which is being run by gay dads.
Yes.
And it's for men who are considering surrogacy, so that's focusing right on the aspect of surrogacy. That's, do you want right to give us the details of that?
Yes, it's on next Saturday, the 6th of June. It's going to be held in Paran from 2 till 4pm. It's a free seminar for any gay men or gay couples who want to find out more about surrogacy, doing it here in Australia, India, Canada and the US. And we invite everybody to come along and listen to some of the experiences from some of the gay guys who have actually done surrogacy and find out some more information and get those basic questions answered.
There's quite a band of men now, aren't there, in Melbourne?
Yeah, Melbourne is the centre for surrogacy for some reason in Australia. I blame Lee Matthews and Tony Woods.
That SBS documentary.
Because they're the ones that got us onto it as well. No, there's a very large number of gay men in Melbourne who have children via surrogacy, and it's great because our kids are going to grow up knowing that they're not the only ones, but they're part of a very large and growing group.
Yeah. So that question about parenting and being a dad, to kind of sum up and send us off on our way, is anyone brave enough to start?
Okay. When I have Eddie in front of me, it's everything it should be. I never imagined I could care for someone as much as I do. It's taken a while, I have to say, being the non-biological dad, sort of bottom of the pecking order sort of stuff. It's been, Eddie and I have chats with each other and we talk about, you know, how the parenting's going and is it okay and is he happy with what's going on. And also, I come from a WOG family, so, and I've entered into this parenting thing with a bunch of white people, so this is for me incredibly negotiated, and it's very controlled and low level talking, and it's kind of not what I grew up with. So I always sort of think, oh, something's wrong. We must be in the middle of a fight or something because it's all very quiet.
Thanks, Cisco. So Michael,
I'm feeling
about you?
Culturally anemic at the moment.
You're looking a little pale.
Always a little bit ginger at the same time. Good parenting. Echo what Cisco said. When we're with Eds, it's a little love journey that adds to the world, and anything that is a love journey, I think the world needs. And it's an exercise in hope. You have to believe it's going to work. And at those crisis points, have your emotional backbone ready and know that really you've just got to make it work for the sake of the child. Mm. And the flight response in the face of crisis isn't, you can't
it's
go
not
there.
It's an option.
No, it's not an option. Mm. So the four of us just have to kind of pick our kind of emotional, psychological socks up and keep going. Mm. And that's all we can do.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.